I'm here in Brighton with Nick Bryce for my first interview of the Edinburgh Fringe. And Nick, we're sitting outside a cafe called the Mad Hatter. And if I look to the left of your head, I can see a poster on a window called A Big Bite-Sized Summer Soiree, taking place in the Mad Hatter. Now, bite-sized plays up at the Edinburgh Fringe in, a pretty big theatre space. But I know its roots, and of course you'll be able to talk about them, but bite-sized has never lost those roots, even when it plays theatres, has it?
No, we like to look at the 10-minute play as something that's about a good connection between performers and audience. And our roots are very much in a very up-close and personal style of delivery, which I think we maintain in quite a big venue, to be honest, up in Edinburgh, where, with the actors being involved, as people are queuing for breakfast, we help serve the breakfast, we welcome people when they come in, and the plays are all performed in the round. So we maintain that in Edinburgh, but for our previews, we're doing the Mad Hatter for the first time as a cafe space, which will be a very relaxed and intimate affair, move a few tables out of the way and perform the plays in amongst the audience, and the Mad Hatter are very pleased to have us, and we'll have a nice bar, and they're even putting together these really nice little bite-sized Mediterranean platters of food for only £5 a time. You get a choice of three, so it's a really good way of expending a Saturday night or a Thursday night. So we're going to do all three of the Edinburgh menus one after the other next Saturday the 12th, the following Thursday the 17th, and the Saturday the 26th, the night before we go up to Edinburgh. Each evening is a completely different set of five or six plays with food, and great chance to meet the actors as well afterwards and drink with them and enjoy the Mad Hatter, which is a really nice space. A lot of people spend a lot of time there, and I don't think they've yet had a theatre production in the space itself, so it's a first for them too.
You've got your doing a commercial look on your face then, but for the theatre makers, a lot of people know of your work, but when you go into a cafe, why are you choosing to do that to bed in work for Edinburgh?
Well, before I'll answer the commercial question, first of all, this is a purely fundraising event, actually, for the actors. It's a chance for them to get the plays up and running and actually get some pocket money for the Fringe, so it's the only commercial from their perspective. But in theatrically, this collection of plays, I think, is all new. We tended in the past to take up to Edinburgh, some favourites and some new ones. Well, this time we're going to take a completely new selection, and also a selection of players that are probably more diverse than we've ever had before in terms of the subject matter, the themes, the performance styles, level of interactivity with the audience. We really like this set, and particularly after the Australian tour that we've just done of the dinner theatre comedies, we want to continue this kind of theme of creating theatre that does involve people.
But in terms of the theatre craft, it can't be as simple as moving a few tables out of the way. How do you actually claim a cafe to be a quality theatre space?
Well, I think you use it. You use every angle of it. You use behind the bar, you use in front of the bar, you use between the tables, you where possible. The word site-specific is probably wrong to use here, but you, where possible, use the features of the cafe to create at least a replica of the space where the play is set. The thing about having a set on a stage is there's a fourth wall and the audience are looking at it. With a cafe, you can actually, to a certain extent, use behind the bar, use behind the audience, use the main entrance of the cafe as if it was the entrance to a cafe, and put people into the situation in the middle of the play itself.
Again, then, speaking as the theatre maker, some shows that I've seen that have come back in different forms to Edinburgh have played around with different venues, but you've kept pretty much to the same space. What do you like about the space at the Pleasant Stone?
Well, it's as I said earlier, because it's semi round, it gives us the up close and personal feel. We can get 180 people in there, but no one's more than probably 5 meters from the performance space. Which is unusual for a theatre of that size, and we do get those numbers. We quite often get 180 people in and sell out. So we just haven't found a space that has that does any better than that. And we trust the Pleasants; they trust us. And also, it's in the Pleasants Dome, which means that if it's raining, you've got a wonderful place to hang out and see other shows and have coffee and have food. People can actually spend a whole day there if they need to. If the weather's not good.
You've pretty much got a black box space there, so I guess you've got maximum flexibility.
Yeah, we're going to try something a little different this year. We're going to have a little bit more lighting and to try and explore creating different moods with the players using colour. it's a simple addition, a simple kind of stretch to what we normally do. But we just felt we wanted to try something a little bit fresher, a little bit different, see if we can create a different mood for each player using a bit of lighting. We're still going to keep it very simple and stripped back. So, you know, it's the audience's imagination we're relying on more than the director and the actors, which we find works well for us. But yeah, you know, we're trying something different this time.
You probably got one of the most unique roles in just being able to see a lot of writing, you know, that comes into you across the world from lots of different people. And Bite Size has been going for many years. So from that unique perspective, has anything changed from your perspective in the writing landscape over all those years?
Well, I think we've tended in the past to have some great plays and some plays that are, you know, where the writing's not so good. I think the consistency of the quality of the 10-minute plays we're getting from America and particular, and some of the UK ones, is improving. I think people are starting to take the 10-minute form seriously as not just being a scratch of a bigger play. That they're rather like with cricket, and 2020 cricket, 2020 cricket, and one day cricket. It is what it is. It's a 10-minute play, and it has value in the same way that a charcoal sketch does versus a big oil painting. You know, art is art, and you can't say, well, you know, one is just a subset of the other. It is what it is. A 10-minute play is what it is, and there seem to be a lot more good ideas coming down on the page now in the 10-minute play format. And we're very happy to keep bringing them to the audiences, you know.
And you say it is what it is. So what is it? I mean, what can it do in 10 minutes, having done so many, that it can't quite do in 5 or 15?
Well, I think that's the difference. I mean, you can't do a 10-minute sketch. It's too long, you know. In 10 minutes, what you can do is you can tell a story, but I've seen a lot of 10-minute plays where someone tries to apply all of the act one, act two, act three disciplines of a full play to a 10-minute format, and it you end up with something quite clumsy that's trying to do too much. What you can do is you can visit a world of a certain set of characters and a certain challenge that they're facing, or a scenario or a situation that has parallels and relevance for our lives and our thoughts and our feelings and our challenges. You can introduce characters quickly enough, you can introduce a scenario or a theme quickly enough, and you can develop that theme in 10 minutes quite well. And if you do a good job of that, people will actually create the backstory and the after story themselves. You've just opened the door to a world and seen an episode of an ongoing story, and you can read into what the whole story is as you close the door.
Edinburgh's unique in that you get to play for a month and you get to play in the same venue, unlike a tour where you'll play different venues. So you've got this kind of run in a pop-up space. What happens in the journey of the play from when you hit the ground during the preview week to the last show that you do? Do you finesse it? Do you change it? Have you ever had to take plays out because they've not been working and you put new things in? You know, what happens in the journey of it over the month?
I think there's only been once or twice this is actually our 10th Edinburgh production. We've been there 7 years, but if we include the kids show, it's actually our 10th Edinburgh production. And I can only think of one or two plays that we just found weren't working really well, and we've taken out in all that time. And I've lost count. I've got the numbers at home of just how many plays we've staged up there. I know we've done something like 11,000 performances of 10-minute plays in the 10 years, in the 10 productions that we've done. It's an incredible number. And you know, generally speaking, we don't like to have this idea that we go up there to get a show mature while we're up there. We want to take it up there ready. So the reason that we do these previews, the reason that we create, if you like, false deadlines all the way through June, July, the reason that we do a lot of plays in Brighton and keep the best and add to them in June, July, August, is so that when we arrive, it's ready. We don't subscribe to this idea that you use your early audiences in Edinburgh to get your show ready. What I will say is that, you know, performers are performers, plays are plays, and rather like a good wine, no matter how good it is at the beginning, it always develops as time goes on. Some plays get better, some probably work better early on. You know, it's a mysterious quality. Trying to take a bunch of words that are on a piece of paper and turn them into a magical, meaningful experience is a peculiar alchemy. You've never done it. It's like trying to herd a cat, get a cat onto your lap. You know, you can't have command over it. You can just make it possible. and then the audience and the actors do it in the moment, and therefore some plays get better, some plays deteriorate, some, you know, there's just a natural process. But our aim is to always get it as good as it can be on the first preview up in Edinburgh.
Final question. I'm sure people have asked you before what your favourite 10-minute plays are, but I'm going to go slightly further than that. Of all these plays, and I guess the hundreds that you've staged, what's your favourite moment amongst all of it? Oh, I've got Nick Bryce quiet, so that's great.
The favourite moment is it repeats time and time again. And the favourite moment is when I'm watching a performance and a bunch of actors and a play and an audience come together in a kind of experience that elevates everything, and you know that something great has just been done, and I know it when it happens. The audience know it, the actors know it, and it happens time and time again. And then probably the reason that I keep going back is to experience that again.
Nick Bryce, forever seeking that moment. Thanks ever so much.